on your stereo. Don't compare us to anything, this a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order. Intellectually petty radio on the stereo. Don't compare us to anything, this a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order.
And you are now tuned into another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio, brought to you by M3S3 Clothing. Men make moves and suckers stand still. And as always, on the mighty, mighty, mighty Nerve DJs Network, you already know, man, we only rock with legends around here. And today is absolutely no exception. We have the DEI expert and overall super phenomenal individual, Randy B. How you doing, Quay?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic, especially because I'm here with y'all. And I guess I said y'all, I'm a Southern girl, so forgive me.
That's okay. Where are you from?
Originally from Hampton, Virginia.
Shout out to Hampton.
Shout out to Hampton.
Yeah. How you doing? How's your family?
Everybody's good that I know of. You know, my kids are grown, so, you know, I get a half of a text every, and I have sons, so I get half of a text every now and then. Like, I've never had a man, I tell them all the time, I've never had a man who treats me as disrespectfully as they do. Like, I'll call them and text them six times, and then I'll get something back.
Oh, man, I know. I got daughters.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I text them. Communicative.
No, not so much. Not this new breed, no.
Okay.
No. Although they're getting better.
You okay, know, I hear they get better. Mine are young 20s, so they're in that,
yeah,
that boat.
Yeah, my oldest, she'll call and check on me. And my youngest is really kind of starting to come around. Once they all had kids, though, changed a little bit.
Okay.
You know, they'll call and check on me now, you know, every blue moon.
Every blue moon. And you think about all the sacrifices you made, right? They're just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, well, they don't want to hear that. I didn't ask to be here.
Oh, exactly. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it, but you know.
Yo, what does DEI mean?
DEI means diversity, equity, and inclusion. I've been in the field for decades. It wasn't called that before, but it essentially means that you're trying to create environments that are diverse, that are equitable, and also inclusive, like diverse where there's all different sorts of people when you're looking at major categories like race, sexuality, gender, and things like that. But inclusion means when those people get there, they actually feel comfortable, which is what a lot of companies lack in these days. But because thanks to Trump's work, I mean, and the Supreme Court that he stacked up, DEI is quickly being cut everywhere.
You can't blame that on Trump, though. Like, the guy in office now, he did a shitload of damage to us, too.
Well, I'm saying not as far as DEI. I mean, as far as other things, but I'm saying directly DEI. Yeah, I can pretty directly.
It's Trump.
Republicans on that one. I mean, regardless of how people feel about either of the candidates or anything like that, the Republicans have very much made DEI and anti-woke movement part of their platform and have attacked it vigorously.
Why do you think that is?
Because people want to stay in power. And when you have diversity, equity, and inclusion, that is about balancing power. It is about giving others a fair chance. And so if you have a company, if you have a country where 70% of CEOs are white and male, you have a country where, you know, white people have six times the wealth of Black people. You have a country that, you know, has more CEOs named David than they do women CEOs. And then you have a country at the very same time is the demographics are changing quickly. So it was easy when the numbers were in their favor, but now there's a browning of America, a very, so by 2044, people who consider themselves minorities will be the majority group. And so I think that scares people. So you want to make it where there aren't equal opportunities out there. I mean, DEI, people try to act like DEI is giving people a free chance or giving people who are unqualified positions. And it's not that. It's really, really working against people's natural biases, the biases we all have, right? And people always think I'm saying something bad about people when I talk about biases. I mean, we are all designed to be biased. If I, I went to a HBCU, for instance. When I meet and interview a Black woman who went to a HBCU, I'm naturally, you know, show favor towards that person. It's just natural in us. So if the country was founded by white males, they vote for each other, they give each other jobs, they build each other up, and they give each other opportunities. So it's really kind of a way to force people not to rely so much on their biases and give other people an opportunity.
I think them folks scared that when they are numerically at a disadvantage, they're going to be treated like they've treated others.
They're terrified. I mean, I think it comes from...
And they should be.
They should be, but everything they're doing, like, you know, when you go against like the anti-woke movement, right? I was thinking about Beyonce because I'm so proud of her and what she's done. You know, she went to the Country Music Awards a few years ago, was treated terribly when she did a duet with a performance with the Dixie Chicks. They treated her horribly. They did not make her feel included. So what did she come back? She's like, I'm going to make a country album. You know, let me bust the door down. And you're having all of these people like the guy from Dukes of Hazzard, John Snyder and things coming out. And they're very angry that Beyonce has taken their music and they're calling it cultural appropriation. And I'm like, see, this is why people don't want us to be woke, because if people were aware, which is all wokeness means, they would know that country music is ours. I mean, we founded it. The banjo came from Africa. You know, it was the music we played while we were enslaved. And then they took over when they were imitating us during minstrel shows. And so I always say that if Black people knew the truth about how great we were, we would kill it out here. I mean, it would change us. But because you go to school and you don't learn about Malcolm X, or you don't learn about all the authors and scientists and contributions we've made, you know, all you learn about over and over again is Martin Luther King and being enslaved. The esteem of our children and adults is low.
I mean, I guess the pushback on that one would be, it's been this way since we integrated. Mm-hmm. We've been knowing that our schools were shittier. Mm-hmm. You know, at some point, the parents need to do a better job.
Oh, God, yeah. I always say, anyone who is not educating their kids, like giving them that secondary education, anyone that is in a quote unquote minority group is messing up. I think I would be a nutcase if my parents did not do their own kind of Black curriculum at home and make me feel like I was, you know, something, and that there were a lot of possibilities, because the school didn't make me think that at all.
And you know, one thing, I had Tim Wise on. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I do.
I had him on last year, I think it was. And one thing that really bothered me is when people say Black and brown. Mm-hmm. Cause, and I got nothing against brown folks, but they struggle ain't our struggle.
No.
And when we start lumping, you know, minorities all into one, that's usurping our struggle, who we've been treated way worse than any other community in this country since we were brought here.
Yeah. I don't like people of color either.
I hate that. I hate that shit.
I don't like people of color. What I will say is, though, I use people of color and Black and brown in some cases when I'm talking about uniting. Because we do, in that case, kind of need each other.
How?
In some cases, we do. I mean, Black people are not, we can't do it just by ourselves when it comes to the major shift I'm talking about, like revolutionizing this world. And so I do feel as if there should be some camaraderie. We're not the same, but we can be comrades in a war against something that affects us all, us to the worst extent by far. But I always tell people, I'm Black. I'm not a person of color. I'm Black. And that is significant to me. It means something totally different than a person of color.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Although I disagree. I don't think we need anybody else. I think we need uniformity. I think we need, you know, a oneness. And we've shown it through the centuries that when we commit to each other.
Yes.
We're a force. And if we committed to each other, just us in this country currently, ain't no stopping us. We don't need anybody.
Listen, I'm down for it. Trust me. Like, I'm so down for that happening. I love my people, and I love when I'm just with my people. Like, I love when I'm in spaces and it's us. Like, I am the happiest then. But I guess maybe in the short term, it would just. Yeah, because, you know, I guess it's interesting. I don't speak about it when it comes to us. The reason why I talk about people of color, when I use the term sometimes, or Black and brown, is more for them, if that makes sense. Because I find that people consider themselves so different. Like, it's always interesting to me because people are fine with us being discriminated against. Like, they're fine. Yeah. But then when it affects them.
Them. It's a problem.
There's an issue and they're against, I'm so anti-racist and this is terrible. And so I keep trying to explain them to them over and over again. What starts with us goes to you. So when they're discriminating against Black people, it's like people forget that they were trying to build a wall. People forget about the ban, you know, from the Middle East. People want to forget all of these things. And I'm like, when it starts with us, it's coming to you. And like now you hear white women in particular carrying on and crying because of all that's happening with reproductive rights. And I'm like, I told you if you are considered, I mean, the system is set up for white heterosexual men, period. You're typically of a certain faith and everybody else can get got. We get it worse, but they can get got. And so what I'm trying to explain to them is you working against me is ridiculous because you on the same boat as I am. My boat might be getting there faster, but we in this together in a way.
Yeah, they don't see it that way. And especially with white women, we're not on the same boat.
Oh, no. It shows that by 54%.
We're in the same lake, maybe, occasionally.
Yeah.
But we definitely not in the same boat.
Well, what I mean by is if you're talking about legislation, you know, who legislation is set up for. If you look at the way that our government and who's running the government, who's running the banks, who's running major organizations, they ain't in like they want to be. They're not in. And so I just sometimes when I talk about that's why they have the anti-woke movement, because if they were to look at the numbers, they would understand that they ain't winning. I mean, they are white adjacent and they definitely benefit from their husband's supremacy. And they definitely do benefit the most out of anybody else from white supremacy, but they're getting it too. And they seem so shocked. And I'm like, I gotta tell you, I've been trying to tell you. Okay.
So let me ask you this. What's a good Black?
So I started this series called A Good Black because I don't even think that we Black people are aware of how we code switch. And I also wanted white people, because white people argue with me daily, because the arrogance that they think they know Black people more than we know Black people, right? And I really wanted to say, you don't even know us. Like, you know who we allow you to know.
Yeah.
So it's a sarcastic, so it's real yet sarcastic. So these are the things that are done by Black people or a lot of Black people to be Black, to make it in this world. But don't dare think that's who we are, or don't dare think that you're in or you know us, because we don't reveal ourselves to the world very much. And then the world doesn't allow us to reveal ourselves except for in the ways they want us to be seen, which is thugs are hating Black people where, you know, the person is not associated with Black people whatsoever. They're the super good Blacks, the magical Negroes.
I don't think I heard that one before.
Oh, the magical Negro is in every corner of every organization in the world.
What's the magical Negro?
The magical Negro is the Negro that is super good Black that white people have embraced as acceptable.
Oh, those the coons.
They're doing a lot of cooning, shucking and jiving and everything, but they're magical Negroes and they're rewarded for their coonery, buffoonery. People wonder why we can't all be that way. And what's, I always love when people think that they're the magical Negroes, like Don Lemon. People thought he was a magical Negro. Like, I think we thought he ain't messing with Black people. He ain't down.
He done got niggified a little bit, though.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He got, you know, but before I think they thought, oh, my gosh, he was the kind of Black man that made them feel safe. He was gay. He was married to a white man. He didn't talk about Black politics whatsoever. He was a magical Negro, like, you know, Lucky Charm level Negro. And he got woke. And, you know, that's why they have to kill this wokeness, because these magical Negroes are throwing them off. You know, I almost feel sorry for them. I mean, do you remember, like, Beyonce would come out, she would mainly sing, she would say a few words. Beyonce did not talk. If everyone looks back at her career, she didn't talk much, and when she did, it was about nothing, her songs. Then she came out at the Super Bowl with the fist up.
I don't know if that was her being woke or her being in tune.
I think that Black people, a lot of Black people, what you see happen is they are good Black for a lot of their lives. And then once they make it to an extent where they have the freedom, I see it all the time. They have the freedom to be genuinely and authentically and publicly Black, they'll let it go. It gets to a point where I have gone past, I've earned the power that you have over me, right? So Beyonce can now do like what she's doing with the Country Music Awards and say, I can take over this whole daggone thing if I want to, you know, because she's at that level. But she played it smart before. And I've seen many of an executive do the same thing. I mean, I tell people I was a really good Black. I had to be for a while. And then, you know, I got to a point where for the most part, I had what I wanted. And I, you know, I was always woke, but I didn't let them know I was woke.
Yeah. I remember I had a coworker and he was like, Joe, you know, you're my friend. I said, where do I live at? What's my kid's name? So I ain't your friend. We cool at work.
Right.
Y'all be misconstruing stuff. You know, you think, oh, well, that's my, no, don't go around town talking about you got a Black friend because I'm not that guy.
Oh, you know, that's what I'm saying. You know that they use this as
Black. Oh my God. I know in his mind, I was his Black friend.
Oh, and they would quote it to me. They'd quote all the time, at least once a week, someone has to tell, you don't know what you're talking about because my Black friend. And I ask them two things. One, are you sure you're friends? And two, my big question is, does your Black friend have a Black friend?
Because the rest of us may not be looking at them as no Black friend.
Exactly. Like, don't tell me what Candace Owens said. Don't tell me what Clarence Thomas said.
Although Candace Owens be right a lot of oftentimes, I won't say.
I'll be honest with her. She used to aggravate me so badly. And I protect my blood pressure because I have to deal with what I have to deal with all the time. So I choose not to listen to certain people. So she may be saying some right stuff. I don't tune into anything she says.
Yeah, see, sometimes she's right. Are you familiar with Pastor Daryl Scott? Huge Trump supporter.
Oh, is this the one? No, this isn't the one who quit yesterday, right? It's crying.
Wait a minute, I don't know because I wasn't paying attention yesterday. No,
the huge Trump supporter, he's gay. This one's gay, so I doubt he's he's openly gay and black, and he's left the Republican Party as of today because he has discovered that some of those people are racist.
Yeah, and that's basically what I was about to say. Like, it's interesting. I follow him on Twitter, and Twitter has become like the white supremacy springboard.
Yeah, but I quit that the day Elon Musk bought it. I quit.
It's amazing how you can see his frustration when because he ain't complete. You know, it's not like he just tap dancing completely. He recognizes some of this shit ain't right, and he calls it out. You know, he calls out the racism in the Republican Party, always has. I give him credit for that. I don't agree with much that he says, but I'll give him credit for that. But it's like, dude, like you seem surprised. And this can't be as like the and don't get me started on the Democrats. They just as racist, you know, they just politely racist. Republicans just don't give a fuck.
Right. You're I agree with you. I'll say this. I do believe some people live in denial. You know, I have, you know, because I do this for a living, I have talked to so many black people who've said, no, I never experienced racism. Or this is the first time I experienced racism. And they're like 40. And I'm like, you, and sometimes I believe the only way you can cope is not to see. I have a lot of black people who get mad at me now for the information I share. And there are a lot of black people who don't want to be woke. I think it's too painful for them and they'd rather live in complete denial until sometimes they're just forced. They can't even, you know, they can't deny it anymore.
I mean, it fucks up their money.
Well, no, because you could be woke and get your money. I mean,
it's very hard to do in some corporate structures to be woke and still be able to go to work and perform successfully.
It is impossible to be publicly woke.
It's maybe even worse to be privately, because the way you were sitting in those meetings changes, the way you looking at your boss changes when you got to go on those golf outings. You're visibly more irritated, and you may not even notice it. Like, it definitely.
I have some friends who are extraordinarily successful. And they are woke, but they got that code switch on so hard. That's why I try to explain to white people, like, we are brilliant people. You don't even know. And they are doing, and they handle the environments by kind of having an underground railroad sort of thing. So they give people certain advice behind the scenes.
But those are probably people that were woke going into it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It's a difference when you find shit out as you've already been on your journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. Those people find it difficult because everything changes.
Yeah. Agreed.
And people that have been woke from day one, they already know it's a game. I got to play the game. I'm prepared mentally. But man, when you see, and you can see somebody that was one way and then for whatever reason, they wake up and shit's different.
Oh, for real. For real. And those people call me like, I learned that they were this way. I remember when Trump was running for president and people were like, we've been best friends since sixth grade. I didn't know. And yeah, it is. It is different when they get that wake up call.
What was your... I've asked this before, a nigga moment. Where you had your first experience with blatant racism towards you.
I mean, I was called nigger.
Really?
I was called nigger when I was 8. I was called nigger again at 10.
What happened at 8?
On the playground. And I whooped Thomas's ass. Him to this day. Yeah. I whooped his ass. I'm also, you know, my grandparents owned a grocery store in Mount Pleasant, Texas, and I would spend my summers there. Mm-hmm. And Mount Pleasant, Texas is just like In Heat of the Night, like separated whites on one side, blacks on one side by a train track, essentially. And one time this white man who had his tongue half cut off, it was like purple, came in to use the phone because his tractor had broken down. And he says, I'm in this nigga store. I'll never forget that. I was probably, that's when I was like 10 or 11. And my family, real Texans, so they had guns everywhere. And I remember it was there was a gun under the shelf of the refrigerator. And I remember viscerally wanting to pick up that gun and say, you where? Say it again. And that was me at 10 or 11. So I was always kind of crazy. I was always kind of off. But I feel as if.
I'm curious, though. What was the rest of the family's response?
You know what? Now that I don't think that I told them until much later.
Okay. So you're the only one that heard that.
I was in there by myself because there was a little gas station in front. Okay. So my older cousin was outside. I don't know where my grandparents were. But it took me a while to say anything because my family's crazy. And I'm like, they're going to kill him. And I wanted to kill him at that time, but I remember not saying anything. But I think that for me, the nigger moments that broke my heart was with my kids. You know, when my son was called nigga repeatedly, I did that put me in the bed. Like that just, and this is what I do, right? I'm extraordinarily woke, but I wasn't ready. It broke me down.
Has it been easier for you being light-skinned?
Yes. People that don't believe in colorism can't believe in racism. Colorism is real.
Any guilt associated with that?
Guilt. That's a good question. Probably. Somebody told me sometimes it's always you yellow girls who are out here acting a fool. probably. That's a really good question. I'll say that, you know, I'm lighter than either one of my parents. It was one of those things. They were like, who that, you know, that came out. And a good portion of my family is Muslim. And my family was woke. I mean, my mom went to Hampton, graduated from Hampton, was a professor at Hampton. My dad was super woke, kept going to jail. Definitely a freedom fighter. So I probably always would have been somewhat, I don't know what you would call it, but I was going to be pro-black. So I don't know if it's guilt. I feel helpless sometimes, or I feel when my friends tell me stories, I am sad. I am embarrassed by my ignorance as a person who, you know, thought that I was woke my whole life. I still hear stories from friends that things that happened that I did not fathom, right? I didn't understand because my family, So I guess I'm saddened by it. I'm saddened by colorism and that we can't escape what was done to tear us apart. But I know I've had it easier. I know that, I hate when people say, oh, I got teased for being light-skinned. Okay, you may have, just because you have suffered in some small ways doesn't mean that you don't benefit from a privilege. So absolutely. I mean, and then just with white people. I mean, white people are most comfortable with people that are closest to them. So if nothing else. I think about when it comes to dating and things, I literally cannot stand, I cannot stand for a black man to say to me, oh, I love me some red bones. I love me a yellow one. Because that means that you're practicing colorism and that.
Okay. You don't have preferences in men.
Black.
Okay. But are you okay with him being 600 pounds?
Probably not.
Isn't that a preference?
Right, but a preference rooted in racism and something that has been done to us mentally, where we have been taught to hate ourselves, is very different than a preference like, I like men who are 6 feet, I guess. I don't have that, you know, but if when I see us so still immersed in what was meant to tear us apart, I am saddened by it. And I certainly don't want a man to be attracted to me based simply on how he's been fucked up by white supremacy. I don't, that does not turn me on. That is sad to me. And I think that we should be consciously working our ways out of how we've been brainwashed by this country and this world. And even if it has to be done, you know, I mean, I hate when I hear people say, oh, I was praying that my kid would be light skinned, or, oh God, I don't want him to get too dark during the summer. You don't want to let your kids go out and play outside because they make it dark. I mean, we have to understand that that's a sickness and we've been brainwashed. So I don't want to be a part of somebody's whatever.
It's also a sickness, but it's also a cruel reality in that you want the best for your children. And we both know that being light skinned, you get treated better.
As women in particular.
Yeah. So I get what you're saying, and I agree with you, but devil's advocate is it's not necessarily that person is self-hating. They just understand that the road may be easier.
Right. But what I hope is that one, they don't, whatever say their child is, they don't talk that bullshit to their child.
Yeah, I would agree.
Child hate themselves.
Yeah.
Right. And that they continue to work on themselves. I mean, brainwashing doesn't just go away. Right. So we've been taught these things since the beginning. We watched music videos where every girl on the boat or the yacht with the hip hop artist was light skinned. So we've been fed all of this.
Yeah.
So it is up to us to consciously work at it and work against it. And so I would want a brother who was a little bit more woke than that and loved his blackness more. I would.
Does your strong self-identification make it more difficult in the dating scene?
I don't know, to be honest with you about that, because I think I went to a HBCU. So everybody's usually, if you didn't come in woke.
You're leaving out woke. Yeah.
You're leaving woke. So the love of blackness was there. I mean, actually there was a guy I was crazy about, Malcolm, that went to Tuskegee University, and he was a part of a group that was extraordinarily pro-black. Like they were the group, and they did not have any girls that looked like women that looked like me. And Malcolm was in my poetry class. I want to say, Malcolm, I am down, Malcolm. I am down. Well, you know, give me a chance, brother. Give me a chance. But I would, you know, and then I was married a long time. I would think, though, that I would not be drawn to a man who was not down. I don't think that it would go very far. No, I think it would probably cause problems when I, you know, yeah. You got to be down because it's so much a part of who I am. And, mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to come and say, did you see what happened today at, you know, in Alabama? Like today they struck out DEI in all state schools, right? And I don't want some man who's like, well, Randy, maybe. No, I want him to be angry too. Let's be angry together.
I feel you on that.
Tequila and hang out. I want us to be, I don't think I would be at all attracted to somebody who was not down.
That is extremely difficult to not be able to share your anger.
Right.
Are you familiar with Grandmaster Jay?
Okay. So you could just insult me today. That's what you want to do.
I'm not trying to insult you. I've had him on the show several times, actually. Uh-huh. And Etta is all, she, one of my strongest supporters, but she, oh my God, talking about holding this man down. Shout out to her. Why aren't we as a community doing anything for his injustice?
I think what I tell people is I think we're weary because it's so much. I mean, I think if black people just paid attention to what was happening in their neighborhood or at their jobs, or that's enough to wear us out. And then when you turn on the TV and, you know, they like the porn of black people being abused. I believe we're so overwhelmed with what it is to be black in this country. And that's why we need to unite. So it's a bigger movement and not just this. Yeah, that's what I think.
I think he was just not a likable person to a lot of people. Mm. And that made it easier for a lot of niggas to just be like, fuck him.
And
I think that's why they did that to him. I mean, his organization was that one he did something that hadn't been seen in this country since the Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
And they made sure to, and I wouldn't be surprised if they COINTELPRO'd him.
I wouldn't either.
You know, but it, and I think he and I have had this conversation. I'm trying to remember, but that he just wasn't, you know, he wasn't a palatable person to everybody.
No,
made him successful. but you either loved him or you hated that man. There was no gray area with him.
But don't you think that is the case for all change makers, for all people who are bold enough to believe in something and push it through?
No.
You don't?
No. Not with black people. Like the key for most successful black leaders is the duality. Mm-hmm. They are able to be an asshole when needed, but a loving father figure or mother figure are required also. Mm-hmm. And your man's was, he didn't give a fuck about your feelings. Like, it was facts over feelings, literally.
Yeah. I didn't know all of that about him to speak on it. But, oh, for sure. I mean, it really bugs me sometimes when I'm, you know, I talk a lot, about, you know, blackness and our issues. And I get people saying, oh, you're so intense or you're so angry. And I was like, I am the fool of my friends. Like, I am the silliest, softest one that there is. I'm fighting for us, but that's not all that I am.
What's happiness to you?
Peace. And by that, I mean safety. I want to feel safe to be me. And not feel as if I have to hide parts of myself. You know, I don't think that we appreciate how stressful it is to worry every day. You know, when you're just driving a car and you see a police person, or just going to the mall and wondering if you can make a return, or, you know, the safety of your children. I have two sons, not that his sons get abused, or if you're going to get a promotion that you're well qualified for, if you're going to get the bank loan at the same rate. I believe that there's always this stress that goes on in our minds of not feeling one, at home, and two, safe at home, and three, the ability just to be home within our own bodies and community. So that's happy to me. When I am traveling and I am in black countries, mm-hmm. I feel so free and happy. I was born, I'm an American. I was born here. And of course I have love for it, but I am the happiest and freest, you know, when I'm in, you know, Kenya or Ghana or Jamaica, or, you know, I just, it feels, it's peaceful. I don't have these dialogues going on in my brain where I'm constantly concerned about things. Being under the white gaze is a trip.
I have never been to one of those countries, so I would not know. I'm scared to fly.
We have to change that.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Oh, come on,
yeah. And Etta said that he had 2 open heart surgeries. They will release him soon due to medical requirements. That would be dope. Let me know too, Etta. And you know, when he gets out, I need him here.
Is Etta named after Etta James?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I've never seen, like, she has really held this brother down.
Don't you love that?
Yeah, it's it's some beautiful shit to see.
Yeah,
you know. What's a love that you admire between two people?
You know, it's hard. If we're talking about romantic love, that's so hard because you never know what you see. If what you see is real,
but from what you've seen.
I mean, of course, I love like Barack and Michelle are because they are, especially Michelle is honest about our former first lady. First Lady Michelle Obama is honest about the things that she didn't like about him and the years that she didn't like him. And so there's an honesty there. And regardless of what has happened or whether they liked each other or not, they've held each other down. I respect that. I didn't know them personally, but I love Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee.
Oh, because, my God. Their love was just so fucking palpable.
And but real. I mean, they were like, yeah, he had this other woman. I mean, they're very, you know, and they were the ones who talk about there being several divorces within one marriage. So they were just so honest. And I always appreciate people who are honest, particularly in times like today that everyone seems to want to show you this superficial picture of everything. I tell people, I remember when I was raising kids.
That's not just today, though. That's been going on for
forever. Years. Oh, yeah, yeah. Forever.
Because great-granddaddy or granddaddy had a whole family on the east side.
That's so true. That's so true. You know, it's so funny. My dad died in a car accident when he was 35, you know, very young. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, I was only a child. And I was so mad at him. I'm like, what country black man doesn't have a child somewhere? I really wanted it. I was like, what's wrong with you? Like, where is my long lost sister and brother? Because I wanted it. I wanted siblings, right? What kind of respect? Who are you? Because of, you know, how people, there's always someone who shows up at a funeral that you're surprised about. Not my dad. He failed.
Oh, he didn't fail you, but how did that affect you though? How old were you?
I was eight. In a beautiful way, I think it made my relationship with my mother extraordinarily close. And then I think that it made me. I remember, you know, as I was in college, and I didn't have siblings, but as I was in college where you form those really tight relationships, I really could not understand my friends and when they fell in love and their dependency on men. I really honestly thought something was lacking. I was like, I don't love like that. What is going on? So we're going to cut all 4 of the tires and break into his house. And what happened? Like, I honestly could not. I'm serious. I honestly couldn't relate to it. And then I realized that my father died. My mother actually blossomed, right? She became bigger in her career than I think she would have. I didn't know that she had a man, but now I can look back and I'm like, oh, he wasn't just painting her rental houses. Like now I get that my mama had friends, but they were... They were
unofficial.
They were unofficial and they didn't define her. My mother never was this woman who was like needed a man or looked for a man. So I definitely think that I didn't understand my friends who had a father and mother in the home, or they had a mother who always, like, you know, had a man. I don't think I really understood that. I always thought that it was me. And then if you find someone that you like, then, you know, that's cool. But I think it affected me mostly that way. I probably have some daddy issues in that I do like, you know, you want a man to be somewhat stable, like a little taken care of, no matter how strong. And I think that if I'm candid, it made, because my mother also died when I was 27 of breast cancer. I think that it made me make some bad decisions and be desperate to have family. So I was a little bit too generous and things with people that were technically my family, but were not acting very like a family should.
Yeah.
And I realized that I was, you know, while I never had that desperation, like for a man, I definitely had desperation for family, that feeling of family. And that's probably where I have made my biggest mistakes back in the day until I had to have a conversation with myself.
That makes sense. And yeah. I'm sorry. I completely disagree with you. That no man is complete with just one woman. That just completely untrue.
You said what?
She says that no man is complete with just one woman.
Oh.
And I couldn't disagree with that more.
Yeah, I believe. I don't want to believe that.
Like how do I say this politically correctly? The complexities of a woman are challenging enough. Right. To add more women to that is almost insanity. I'm just saying. Like, I don't know what's old boy, the white dude with, he used to have all the wives and they dropping like flies now.
Oh yeah.
Like, man, my man be going through it. Although dude is a whole asshole too. Like, I haven't watched that show too much. Right. But bruh is like he be picking the low hanging fruit.
Well, don't a lot of men.
I think we pick who treats us nice.
No, I think people do pick what's easy.
Well, that's true too.
Not all men. I mean, and I get that. I never forget one time I went to a club. And I was married and I came and I was partying with my friends and came home. I said, everybody was asking these two particular women to dance. And they kind of like weren't asking some of my friends to dance. And I was like, why is that? Like, did I lose? You know, it was like, well, because you look like the type of person that somebody got to have a conversation with and take out to dinner. Sometimes people are at the club and that's not what they're looking for. They're looking to go home with somebody. They don't have time for all that. But you look like somebody that, you know, you want to go to dinner and you're going to try to order appetizer, entree, and dessert. And nobody, and, you know, want to talk to them. So I think sometimes people want what's easy.
I mean, it's situational. Like at the club, no, you don't want a brain.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like if you going to talk philosophy, you should be at the library.
Right. But Yeah.
if I wanted brilliance, you know, that's where I'd go. I want stupid and drunk.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's easy for the time.
Yeah, but that's at the club, though.
Right. But you know, a lot of people meet their women at the club.
Yeah. I wouldn't say a lot. I would say the majority are definitely, especially I don't think nowadays, like I haven't
been online now, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And her name is like literally right there, Edda. It's Randy B. Edda's taken over.
Comments. Hey Edda.
And no, we don't run from strong women. Strong women push people away. Under the auspices of, if that's the correct word, of being strong. I think there's the definition of a strong woman has got, I don't know, misinterpreted. Like you can be a quiet and be the strongest woman in the room. I think a lot of women confuse being a bitch with being a strong woman. Excuse my language. I'm sorry.
Oh, I have no problems with your language. I'm trying to think about how I come back at you and I'm diplomatic about that. I think it's a very nuanced, complex conversation. I agree with you. I've had some women who tell me how strong they are, and they are just not nice people at all, like to me or to anyone. But I do believe that there are some men that have egos that are not able to take women that they feel are stronger than them in certain ways.
Oh, absolutely.
And the person could be kind and loving, but still strong. And I think there are some men whose egos are not able to take that.
Oh, absolutely.
My aunt told me, I remember a long time ago, she's like, you know, Randy, you know, you will always need a man. Like you need someone who's confident and comfortable with themselves. So like how we can have a conversation and debate and you don't see that as disrespectful, right? Because you're solid in yours, you know. There's some people who can't take that.
Yeah, I don't really care. Say what you got to say. Although in a relationship is different. It's the nuances, situational, when you are having this debate, what you're having this debate about, how you're going about it, you know, and a lot
not
of women,
disrespectfully. I think that is coming. I'm hood, but a lady. Absolutely. Yes.
And that is perfection right there.
That is.
Like you want a little drama.
Well, you know, the unfair part about a patriarchal society though is I always was raised that I had to take care of my man. So I'm Southern. So the cooking and the cleaning and stroking of the ego and all that. And my mom told me her advice to me was like, fuck them and feed them and they're happy. So I had to, you know, that was that. And, you know, I told people, I said, but then because of the way the world is and the economy, I said, we got to go out and earn some money for the bacon. I said, then we got to go shopping for the bacon. Then we got to fry the bacon up in a pan. Then we got to serve the bacon to our man. But we only can eat half the bacon because they want us to look a certain way, you know. And I was like, whereas a man, all he has to do is go earn the bacon. He got to earn money for the bacon. And that's it. Let me tell you something. If I say that I have a man who earns a certain amount of money, mm-hmm. my man's this, I got a good man. They don't care how much time he spends with his kids, if he's taking care of me in the bedroom, if he's kind to me, if he buys me whatever. If I say, oh, she's second in charge over at, you know, IBM, they're like, girl, she got her a good man.
Yeah.
But women, we got to be everything.
That no. So that's the other women. When it's you and your boys, mm-hmm. does she listen? Can she cook? You make, it never comes up in the conversation.
No, cook it, yes, but you still are expected to cook and you're still expected to look a certain way. Because let me tell you something, I raised two boys.
Is a lot of ugly women out here with kids.
It sure is. We didn't say who could have sex. We said who could have having a man now. Everybody, let me say something. Everybody, and I try to explain this. When I have a bunch of guy friends and they'll say, well, I'm not spending money on a woman. I'm not doing this. So I said, so what you're offering is sex? That's what you got? That's it? I said, because sex is literally the easiest thing in the world to get for as a woman. Size, shape, it looks, if you never seen a show of Maury Povich and you got women getting 9 men tested, we don't think you're doing us a favor. We can get that. Right? And I have men, and these are my men, you know, they're in my age group, so they're older. And I'm like, and no offense, but if that's all you're offering, why wouldn't they go get it from the 29-year-old UPS man who will offer it? Why? And that's all you're offering. sense to me.
I mean, I think that's a. I don't think that's exclusive to just men.
I agree. I think that women who just want to offer that, you can get that anywhere too.
You know, and the older you get, you know, I too am older. The older you get, the less valuable that box becomes.
I disagree now. Wait a minute. Now you don't go too far.
I'm just saying.
I would say mine has gotten better. I'm better.
Oh, you. Yeah. But I look at you.
Yeah, women don't have the what happens to y'all physically doesn't necessarily happen to
yes,
us.
But as our game decreases down there, our wants switch.
That's right, Ed. Tell them to stop playing.
Our needs switch. You know, right. So it doesn't matter how flawless you are. If I only got 2 minutes, I only got 2 minutes. I don't care what type of tricks you're doing. You're gonna get the exact same thing in it's 2 minutes. So
which is why you gotta be offering more than that.
But both of y'all gotta be offering more than that.
No, because a woman can offer more than 2 minutes. She can go.
Yeah, but that's not helping him. He don't care. How is that helping him?
Well, I think that there's more. Well, I can't say with so much, but I'll just say, you know.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Can't help.
Leave it at that.
Well, it always helps to be well-rounded.
Yes. All of us, men and women, we could be well-rounded.
Yes, that definitely helps. You give speeches. Is that correct?
Well, so I was in the DEI world in corporate America. Owned my own company for 23 years, doing that. And then I decided that I wanted to retire and do DEI for real. Because when you're doing DEI for corporations, you can't tell the truth. You're really kind of very soft peddling. And I really wanted to make a change. And so now I'm saying things directly. And I wrote some books and I do my show, Truthing. And I thought that when I did this, that I would never get hired again. And I've been surprised. People still do call me to travel to speak at their conferences or come to their company and speak for certain things. And I always say, well, have you seen my videos? Because you know, and you know, I'm going to tell you the truth. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm much more professional when I say it, but I do say it. I'm going to say, you know, you invited me here. You say that you all are committed to DEI, but you have not one Black person on the board. You have one Black executive. You know, 87% of your managers are white. So what can we do to change that? And let me give you some tips how to change it. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not going to BS you. But I do it in a professional way and with love. But yeah, so I still get asked to speak, surprisingly. I was shocked by that. But now I'm really just, I don't think you can change what you will not face. And, you know, this country to this day tries to deny racism, you know, really plays down and softens up slavery. They're now saying it was good for us.
Yeah, that's wild as fuck right there.
Yeah. That's... So
you kind of benefited from it. Like, yeah, what?
Right. And so I'm that person who tries to call a thing a thing so we can deal with it. And the people who want to learn and care do. And those that don't, don't.
If people want to get in touch with you, how do they go about doing that?
Call me. No, I was kidding. No. My Instagram is hello. No, what is it? No, it's Randi, R-A-N-D-I. Two underscores, underscore, underscore B. Or TikTok is the Randi B. That's where I talk the most trash. I suggest you go there.
I did not know that. Hold on. Let me.
Oh, that's where I talk. I think it's the most trash they find it.
And you said the Randi.
I think that's it.
That is.
Is that it?
That would be it. I just
saw it. So the Randy B. That's
damn, you putting up numbers.
Yeah, I guess. And then on Facebook, I'm Randy B, which is my biggest crowd. And then my website is randyb.net. Bunch of Randy B in.
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check this out. I didn't even think about TikTok. I'm not the I post occasionally on TikTok. I'm not a big TikToker.
Well, I talk mad trash on TikTok and get people real mad at me.
Okay, what's the one thing that you've gotten people most riled up about?
Just if you say that something was racist, you know, I had an incident. It makes me mad. The dumbest video I ever did, in my opinion, went viral because I was in Atlanta. I was about 2 months ago attending the Urban One Honors Awards. And the next day I went to brunch with some of my friends I went to Tuskegee with. And we're at this fancy, fancy, fancy place, mainly white. And this white family that's there, the parents and then their kids. So the parents are maybe in their 70s and then their adult kids. And the woman, the white woman, the older one, is the whole time, like when I say staring at us and not pleasant. But at the end of the dinner, she and her husband come over and they're like, seems like, you know, you guys had a good time, girls. She kept calling us girls. And everyone at the table is 50 plus. I'm not a girl. And then goes to evaluate how we behaved. But you behaved, like told us how we behaved. And so I said that this exchange is rooted in racism. We were very nice to the woman. And white people they have gone crazy. They're literally like 950,000 views on this video. And they were like, that I'm racist and angry and wrong because this white woman was just trying to give us a compliment. And I say, what I try to explain to white people, and I the last video I did says this, privilege makes you think that your intention is more important than the impact. So if you walk up to somebody and touch their hair, and you say, oh, your hair is so pretty, but you're touching a black person's hair, you're wrong. I don't care if you did it because you think our hair is attractive. I don't care if you did it because you're curious. You still can't touch people you don't know. It's rude. And I said, you know, white people always feel like their presence is welcome. She felt comfortable coming over to our table. That's one, and interrupting what we were doing. She thought that her evaluation of our dinner mattered, you know. And I've had white people come up to me all the time, oh, your kids are so well behaved, or oh, that tells me that you think that you have a power over me, that you think that your opinion matters and you have the right to evaluate me. And then the girl stuff, just I didn't like. And that has upset white people. They are so angry. They've reposted me. That has really upset them, that this white woman tried to compliment me and my friends, and I said it was rooted in racism. And they can't see, just because someone was trying to be nice doesn't make it right.
Yeah. Yeah. Your perception of nice is not my perception of nice.
Right.
And they feel that their perception is the only one that counts.
Absolutely. And they feel that they have rights to us.
Oh, boy.
Our spaces. Our places, our bodies. It's exactly the scene. I always tell the scene in Color Purple is exactly what happened. You know, they're coming out the store. It's so on point of that. But yeah, if you go back some videos ago, that really upset them. But they stayed with me.
Although whoever decided to make Color Purple a fucking musical.
I didn't see it.
Should be fucking banned from humanity. They should go live in a forest somewhere alone for the rest of their days. So,
I didn't either.
Just the premise alone is fucking stupid. It just make no sense to me. This has been a phenomenal conversation.
I had a good time. Me, you, and Etta hanging out.
I know, right? Etta must really, really like you, because I don't think Etta sticks around this long ever.
I like you too, Etta. You have to fill the title. But let's do it again.
Absolutely. You let me know and I am there. We are, yes. This was, yes, absolutely.
When it comes to this show, I'm like those women we talked about. I'm easy.
let us see your shirt just so people, where'd you get this shirt from?
My friend gave me this shirt.
Oh, I wish we knew where you can get that from. I like that. That's a beautiful shirt.
If you Google We Out Here at Chumman T-shirt, it'll come up, I'm sure. But yeah, my friend gave me this. Sometimes people, because they know I like my stuff like this.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Go up a little further. Oh, that's so fucking dope.
Oh, yeah. These are my Jet magazine covers. Let's see what's over here. These are, I have a lot of black.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Go back over.
Over here?
Yeah, that the one in the second, the one in the middle.
Those are
Sisters Dancing, right?
Yes.
Oh, I've seen that picture. I've posted that picture before.
Yes.
Oh, that I love art. Oh my God. Yeah, that's just. Oh, but James Baldwin, yo, his clip. Well, I don't know whose show he was on. Oh, that one clip is just.
Yes. Oh, that's my hero.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, I know you got things to do. I'm going to let you go. And yeah, we're going to have you come back because this just was just too much fun.
I had a good time.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did.
And thank you for having me. I really think I see it as a compliment. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was an honor. I was just glad you said yes. So on that note, I will talk to you soon.
All right.
And you have a phenomenal evening.
You too.
Good night. And shout out to you, Etta. thanks for sticking around. Y'all already know, man. This is Jobs. This has been another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio. And please, if you have not done so yet, hopefully I have earned a subscribe on the YouTube channel, Intellectually Petty Radio. That would be pretty dope of you to do so and share, like, the whole nine. Next week we got Randy Rosario coming on at 5:00 and comedian Heather J will be on at 7:00. On that note, I'm out. Y'all have a good one. It definitely was fun. Yeah. It is the end of the show, Etta. I'm sorry, that's it. Willie Dildo. Wow, that's a name for you. Wallet, like what? Oh, what? I don't even know what to say about that one. But yeah, unfortunately, you can replay it back though. It is on YouTube. Intellectually Petty Radio. If you did not know, at some point in the next week, I will also upload it to Spotify, Apple, Google Play, and all the other streaming services for your listening pleasure. On that note, I'm out. Y'all have a good one. Peace.